Welcome to Pop Break Goes to Washington. I'm your host, Allison Lips. This podcast discusses how politics has been portrayed in film throughout the decades. Today, we're discussing the 1976 film, All the President's Men. If you are a journalist or journalism student, you are very familiar with this Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman film about Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein's effort to uncover the Watergate scandal, despite only having sources talk off the record. At the very least, most people know the basic story of the Nixon administration and its downfall. My guest today is Aaron Sarnecki. Frequent Pop Breakers will know him from the Anniversary Brothers podcast, which I've had the pleasure of appearing on several times. Aaron, do you have anything else from your resume you want to add?
Not recently. I mean, I just recorded a podcast with our editor for our podcast, Alex Marcus, and we were talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is an old Marvel show, so not something that I review now, but back in the day was something that I reviewed most episodes of, so that is, I guess, something I could put on my resume.
So, since you're probably listening to this 7 months after
yeah.
that podcast came out, go back and look for that in the TV Break feed?
I think it's in the Pop Break Today. I could be wrong.
Go search wherever you go, get your
go
podcasts.
Go search, exactly.
Or the popbreak.com website. Mm-hmm. That works too. And now we're going back to All the President's Men.
Mm-hmm.
Before we dive into a film, we usually set the cultural and sociopolitical scene at the time. We're not going to do that today because All the President's Men covers the same ground as Dick, which I discussed with Allie Nelson. Instead, we're going to let the movie stand on its own, since it covers two of the three major events of the 70s, the Watergate break-in and Richard Nixon's resignation. The third major event is Vietnam, which isn't relevant to this discussion. Despite its overt political nature, All the President's Men debuted at number one at the box office in 1976 and ended its theatrical run with $70.6 million. The film also won Oscars for Best Supporting Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Sound, and Best Art Direction. It missed out on Best Picture because it had the unfortunate luck to be nominated with Network, Taxi Driver, and the eventual winner, Rocky. Now that brings us to our discussion on All the President's Men. Aaron, had you seen the film before?
So I had seen it once before on Turner Classic Movies back when they, I don't even know if they do this now because they're doing all this corporate restructuring, but they used to do a 31 days of Oscars, I think in March. So I believe that's when I watched it, and that was probably about 8 years ago.
Okay, so you saw it on Turner Classic Movies, whereas yeah. I saw it in every journalism class I ever took.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, not quite, because I was a journalism major, but you watch this movie when you talk about the Watergate scandal. Mm-hmm. Which is a huge watershed moment in the history of American journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And a positive one. We're not going back to William Randolph Hearst mm-hmm. and the yellow journalism. And I'm blanking on the boat that
oh, yeah, I
kind
know
of made up
about.
The story.
Right. For the sinking of the boat in the off the coast of Cuba, you're talking about.
Yeah. Where he's like, you furnish me the photos and I'll make up the story.
Yeah.
So this is one of those movies where as much as I like it, I wasn't looking forward to watching it again because it's a lengthy movie at over mm-hmm. 2 hours.
Right.
And I love Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman and they're amazing together, but I'm not a movie person. So at 2 hours and also being so familiar with the story, it's like, okay, this is the part where they go talk to
mm-hmm.
Deep Throat again. And mm-hmm. let's all giggle at Deep Throat because mm-hmm. it's the name of a porno.
Yeah, and that as a sort of quick aside, was maybe something that they didn't really need to explain in the movie, because it was not so far removed from the actual Deep Throat movie came out. But it was actually like one of the top grossing movies of 1972, which is like so weird to think that like a porno would be like, just like people's parents want to see it. It's just like, what is going on? That's just a strange time in movies. But
there was a few years in the 70s, I'm sorry to interrupt, where porn was mainstream. So you could go to the theater and watch porn. Mm-hmm. With all your closest friends.
Yeah. But yeah, as far as my like exposure to this movie, so this is the second time I had seen it, but I had some familiarity with this story because when I was in middle school, I did do a paper all about the Watergate scandal. And this was probably like 2005, back when like you could get away with using Wikipedia as a source in middle school.
Oh, right. Yes.
So, but I was just so fascinated with this idea that there was this scandal that brought down the president and he had to resign. It was the only president who ever resigned. Like, and I had a really like weird, almost sophomoreish, I think, fascination with it. I actually like had Nixon as like my wallpaper on my like computer for some weird reason. And just the mind of a middle schooler. So,
and I believe you're only like a year younger than me. But yeah. For me, learning about Watergate wasn't really all that shocking because I vaguely remember Monica Lewinsky as a kid.
Okay. Well, see, that's something that I don't remember at all, because I think my parents probably were like, yeah, you're not going to watch that.
The story I got was something like the president dropped his pants in the Oval Office, which is kind of
true, but
I mean,
not really.
Yes. Well, I mean, right. But, when you think about it, that's fairly graphic to tell your child.
Right. Yeah.
But it was something like that. And then I got interested in journalism during the 2000 election.
Mm-hmm.
So my introduction to politics were scandals.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to Nixon, it's like it's a long line of just scandal after scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not even the first one. He's just the one that we remember because it's within living memory for
mm-hmm.
our parents, right, and grandparents, and obviously.
Yeah.
If you're older than 50, you probably have some memory of it. No, because 50 would have been 80s at this point. So yeah. 60.
I mean, yeah, my mom definitely said that, like, she remembers watching the hearings, and, like, it was definitely, like, much must-see TV.
And what kind of gets left out is, even though he had already resigned, this wasn't even the first scandal in the Nixon White House. Spiro mm-hmm. Agnew had to resign as the vice president.
Right, for tax evasion.
Yeah, or something related to taxes, where it's like everyone in the Nixon White House, like there was no
mm-hmm.
people on the up and up, it seems mm-hmm. like.
Right. But yeah, really, so I said, I already had some experience, you know, with this story. But then I actually, I bought the book and I read that. And I have to say that I know we're not really, podcast is more about what does the movie, you know, say about politics, but
the book is important.
The book is important.
Is based on the book. You can go ahead.
I just want to say that it is so much easier to follow the movie if you've read the book, because when I watched it on TV, I was having such a hard time understanding what was going on. And even when I was reading the book, I had a little bit of, because there was just so much, they called this person, then they went here, mm-hmm. then they called this person, they flew to Florida. And then having, you know, read the book now, and now seeing it basically in live action, it's just the pieces really start to come together and be like, oh, now I remember they saw this person. So I do find it, you know, rewarding, but it is, there's a little strange that, like, again, for people in the 70s, I feel like since they were not so far removed from it, it was not necessarily required reading for the movie. But I feel like now that at least the casual viewer is not going to probably pick up on everything if they have not at least some running knowledge of the the story.
Right. I'm going to disagree with that because the book I also have, I've had it for years. When we were going to do this podcast, I picked it up, read 5 pages, and was like, this is boring, and this is way too detailed. Because, like, at 7:32, they broke into the Watergate complex or whatever the time is. And it's like, I don't care that much.
Right.
So I put it down. Also, another part is constantly covering this in journalism classes. People like Katherine Graham and the other names that aren't explained but are mentioned in the movie that you found the book helpful for, I knew who they were.
Right.
But you do need to either read the book or at least look up the Wikipedia article on the Watergate scandal in order to fully understand the movie. You can still follow it without that.
Right.
But there's no explanation of certain people who only appear once or are talked about because they're off screen.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they may not have elaborated on that, one, Katherine Graham did not want to be in the movie at all as a character, and she was the publisher. I believe that was her name, right?
Katherine Graham,
And then there was also the fact that the movie came out in 1976. The scandal started unraveling in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knew those names.
Yeah.
That would be like someone making a movie today on the 2016 election. It's a little larger of a time frame, but we know the players. We don't need you to explain them. Granted, if you were to make something serving as a historical artifact, which clearly they had to have known that this movie wasn't going to fade into oblivion, they might have done more like explanation of people.
Yeah, I mean, the movie's just such an interesting case of, like, basically they only even wrote the book because, like, before they even wrote it, Robert Redford's like, why don't you write it as a book so that I can make a movie out of it?
Right, he was friends with Bob Woodward.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Robert Redford apparently played a bigger role in getting the full story out than I guess we give him credit for. There's also another scene which Robert Redford was just so good in this movie and clearly cared about the scandal, where there's this, it's a long 6-minute scene, I believe, and he's on the phone and he messes up the name of who he's talking to, but he stays in character, and it seems real that they kept that cut in the movie.
I think, and I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
right, because it's like, you know exactly the moment when someone points it out, but when you're watching the movie, it does not feel like that was unscripted.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually really impressed with, like, a lot of, again, we're talking mostly about, like, what does this movie say about politics, but just, like, this is a very, you know, well-crafted movie. Like, that whole scene is, like, one take that, like, goes on for 6 minutes and, like, starts from, like, a medium shot and, like, it ends in, like, an extreme close-up. It's great.
Yes. And the movie is a very tight movie. My main issue with it is I have a hard time sitting through a 2-hour movie.
Right.
But there's not a minute, I would say, that was wasted. If there's any breathing room in it, it's because you need to digest everything that happened.
Right. I mean, you could argue, I mean, like you said, the book has so much detail that it could have been, you know, much longer. And they did a good job of sort of excising what they could. I mean, especially the ending, like, they kind of, the book goes on after, you know, the inauguration, really much explains how they get the story out there, that all of a sudden the pieces start fitting. And so you kind of lose that. But I mean, again, they knew that people knew what happened. So I think they picked, as far as like a narrative structure, they picked a pretty good point.
And they condensed what they had to. It's also, no one's watching a trilogy about the Watergate scandal.
Right.
So they couldn't have extended it on that. And if you watch the movie and you want to learn more, you'll go research it. But their main thing was to make a good movie, which they did. It was nominated for an Oscar. And in any other year, it could have won.
Right. I mean, I was reading, and actually I was just talking to my brother about Saving Private Ryan. And that's it, in both cases, the Academy has said if they could do a do-over, they would give the Oscar to somebody else. So they said Rocky won, but I guess, you know, Academy members who were alive at the time, who still alive now, said if we had to do it again, we might have given it to All the President's Men. That was just nice to say. I mean, you can't really do do-overs.
Also, out of all those movies, granted, I haven't seen them, but yeah. Rocky seems like an odd choice out of all of those.
Oh, it's definitely an odd choice as far as Best Picture. But like you said, it was a very, very great year for, you know, movies. So, you know, it's interesting watching this movie. And this movie has a much
Oh, I forgot. I have seen Network. That's one of Network, my favorite movies, and that was nominated that year.
Yeah.
Again, goes back to journalism.
Right, yeah. That's definitely a movie that as a journalist you have to watch, and a movie that they said like also like have to watch multiple times because it just has so much layers to it. But in this movie, and speaking of journalists, that I was just, this movie, the way it depicts journalism and journalists' role in politics is so different from a movie that we previously talked about, which is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where it's a much more kind of cynical idea of journalism. Granted, it's, you know, based in the 30s, so you kind of mentioned the sort of yellow journalism that was still pretty common back then, where it was sort of like this kind of good old boys club who were kind of trying to, you know, bring down this country bumpkin. But this is very much saying that in, you know, a functioning democracy, you know, the free press are the real heroes.
Right. Completely different message. Still an all boys club. The only time you see women is when they're being interviewed.
That is pretty much
true. The publisher who never makes an appearance.
Right. That would have definitely, because if, I don't know if you saw The Post, which is a Spielberg movie about when The Post, a few years prior to this, was publishing pages of the Pentagon Papers. And that's all about Katharine Graham's decision, of, you know, is she going to publish, you know, the papers and risk, you know, being basically taken down by the Nixon administration and, you know, them destroying the Washington Post?
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Right. So, I mean, I think it really is a good sort of companion piece to this, because that movie actually ends with the Watergate scandal. So it's like the Post is this big, you know, big up and coming, you know, newspaper. I mean, I guess it's already a pretty big deal, but it, you know, the biggest story is yet to come. So I recommend it.
That's kind of interesting. Like, you could kind of have a double feature of those.
You
two
could. You
get
really
the
could.
Full picture. I'm sure there's a third movie that would go along with it, and you can make your own trilogy and complete the story. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a movie about the aftermath rather than the act. Just happening of it. So the Washington Post basically had it out for Nixon.
I mean, basically. I mean, and something
granted,
that they
there were reasons.
Right. I mean,
so many.
It's really interesting, and they only kind of like, I think, hint at it in this movie, that Ben Bradley, the editor in chief, actually had like a very close relationship with the Kennedy administration. He was friends with John F. Kennedy. And, you know, that was one reason why the Nixon administration viewed the Post so suspiciously. You also have Katharine Graham was very close to Robert McNamara, who was the Secretary of Defense. He actually like helped pick out the like the board for the Washington Post. So
it's also very odd, because in my research for this podcast, I found that Bob Woodward actually voted for Nixon as they were starting to peel back the layers of the scandal.
That's right.
Because he didn't think Nixon was involved at the time, and he thought these were just like shadowy players in the background. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's interesting. In this movie, especially the book, kind of goes into this thought process that people just, they did not want to believe that Nixon was involved. There's just like, it just had to be people who were working on his behalf who just got too carried away.
And that's so different from how we see politics.
Right. But it's much more a bottom to top, you know, perspective. Now it's more of a top down perspective.
I'm sure the Nixon administration had something to do with that.
Yeah.
They probably, the whole Watergate scandal destroyed our naivety when it came to what our politicians were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, even if you voted for someone, you're like, if you're critically thinking, you're like, how much of this is plausible?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas then, no one wanted to think ill of the president, even if they didn't vote mm-hmm. for him. Because the movie even mentioned, like, we can't verify your story. Woodward and Bernstein's stories, because everyone's off the record and no other newspaper is able to confirm it or even running the story.
Mm-hmm.
They're on their own with no proof. I mean, Deep Throat wouldn't even come out. He was W. Mark Felt until
it was the 2000s.
I remember it happening.
Yeah.
And then Woodward confirmed it, even though because he had come out. Otherwise, Woodward couldn't confirm it until that person died.
Right, yeah.
And I was looking at the Wikipedia article on Deep Throat, and what I found interesting is people were eliminating it because there were people who were suspected who started dying as far back as the 90s, and Woodward was silent. So everyone's like, okay, it can't be that person because he'd reveal it.
Mm-hmm.
Though we now know that the Nixon White House pretty quickly figured out it was Mark Felt,
mm-hmm.
who he was. What was his position in the FBI?
I think he was like number two.
Yeah, they were able to quickly.
Or he was either number two or like former number two by the time that he was talking to Woodward, which is like really like to think that such a high ranking official is talking to this reporter in the middle of the night in this parking garage.
He may have had something against the Nixon administration.
Right. Yeah, I have.
We don't, not we, but it is generally believed that while he did the right thing, it wasn't for altruistic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the whole he met in the parking lot. And mm-hmm. something that I found that is another interesting fact, Bob Woodward decided that Hal Holbrook, instead of playing Ben Radley, should play Deep Throat because he has a resemblance to Mark Felt, even though Bob Woodward would not disclose or could not disclose who Deep Throat was.
So he's just like, he seems right for it. I'm not going to tell you why, but he does.
Right, which is kind of cool that the movie even had that accuracy, even though it wasn't wide knowledge, where you're just like, they chose Hal Holbrook because who doesn't like Hal Holbrook?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, and like you said, this movie very much it really, especially in political stories, but just in journalism in general, sort of gets you thinking like the importance of sources. And, you know, you have to, you know, make sure your sources are right. You know, can you use an anonymous source for this? Even when they really, really messed up when they're trying to get was it Hugh Sloan to confirm that the White House chief of staff is behind it, and just some of the things that they did.
It wasn't that they were wrong. It was that he was never asked, so he did not confirm that under oath.
But yeah, I did find it funny in this and the book that you learn that some of their methods are like they're just going to list initials of people's names and ask the source if they are right or wrong. It's just like, oh, okay, I didn't think a journalist would resort to that, but
they bent the rules.
They definitely bent the rules. There's times. I mean, this movie does, like I said, it shows, you know, the journalist as a hero, but also sort of as a rule breaker a little bit. There is basically where Bernstein trespasses so he can get into the office in Florida. Where he fools the secretary, says, you know, can you help me with some boxes over here? And then he goes while she's away from her desk. So in some ways, it's sort of like, you know, when there's a big story, you know, bending the rules, it's a little bit okay.
And it's not.
Right.
They were new journalists, so I'm not sure if they weren't fully familiar with those rules or frankly didn't care because they were young and in their 20s.
Right. I will say there is one thing that, and you probably know this, that it's funny that they were in their late 20s. The actors who play them are much too old to be playing them, but they do a great job.
Yes. They look nothing like the actual people they were playing.
But yeah, at the same time, I can't. imagine anybody doing it any better.
And I saw this movie before I knew what Carl Bernstein or Bob Woodward looked like. So yeah. I'm thinking they look like Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford, and they don't.
No. And I mean, that's just Hollywood for you.
Also, I was surprised, and I didn't remember this. Chappaquiddick.
Yeah.
Was mentioned twice, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess goes back to the whole Kennedy thing, because mm-hmm. that was when Ted Kennedy drove his car into a lake or some mm-hmm. body yeah. of water, left his passenger to drown, and then was found in a hotel room somewhere.
Yeah, that's what happened.
And he got away with it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that was a big deal at the time that, you know, he, I guess whenever that was, decided not to run for president, but was not ruling it out later on. And that's why the Nixon administration was so afraid of him. There's like, Ted Kennedy is really popular, but he has this scandal that maybe we can exploit that.
That definitely derailed his presidential ambitions.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah, you learn a lot of things. Like I knew about McGovern, but I didn't know about Muskie, who was basically the front runner for the Democrats before, who basically just his whole campaign imploded. And they talk about the dirty tricks that are, you know, as we're associated with that, you know, in terms of, you know, stealing documents and, you know, all this sort of counterintelligence, which is really interesting. I mean, if you want to talk about, you know, I know we're not talking too much about contemporary politics. I know you mentioned a little bit of the 2016 election, but you do think, you know, there are a lot of parallels that people will, you know, point to the Trump administration.
Of course.
In terms,
impossible not to draw some.
And you know, it is interesting that will they look, you know, will somebody want to make a movie about that at some point, and will they look to All the President's Men? Because there, All the President's Men is very much, you know, a success story that you're like, look, this is where the system worked, and Paul, you know, the reporters can have a huge impact on, you know, the political landscape. You know, the story that, you know, with today is still being written, so we don't know how it ends.
It was still being written when all
yeah, I guess so.
Came out, but it was pretty clear cut what was established.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, for some people it is, for some people it's not. Without getting right. into the validity of that, everyone's watching news that confirms their opinion or point mm-hmm. of view.
Right. I mean,
rather
yeah,
than reading or watching, like Washington Post is considered a newspaper of record. So is the New York Times, mm-hmm. where we look at them as pretty neutral,
mm-hmm.
pure, just the facts. But there are people who are like, they're biased.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, especially one thing that I really appreciated watching this movie is that this is pre-cable news. There are only like, what, there's ABC, CBS and
NBC.
NBC. Those are the only names in TV news. I mean, yes. I guess there's also PBS, but they're not really a competitor. They don't have personal computers on their desks. They have
typewriters, which is a framing device. There's a quote. I don't remember who the she's referring to, but Bob Woodward in the movie says, "You're both paranoid. She's afraid of John Mitchell and you're afraid of Walter Cronkite."
Yeah.
To Bernstein, which I found funny because that shows you how powerful CBS and its news division was at the time, that
mm-hmm.
the Washington Post was afraid of being scooped by CBS.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't afraid of getting by CBS. I don't know what CBS would have, but yeah, CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Mm-hmm.
So that just shows how different the media landscape was at that time. And what did you think of those typewriters as a framing device?
Oh, I think for the most part, you know, it works. Like I said, there was a lot of a story that, you know, was kind of left on the cutting room floor. I bet there's like a 5-hour cut of this movie. It would not surprise me at all.
I don't think there is. I think
okay, it's probably more like
at that point where the president's resigning, and we're going to say the end, but you know stuff's still happening. Right.
I mean, I think it does work, because, I mean, like, that's basically, they live at their typewriters. I mean, yeah, they're going here and there talking to sources, but that is, I think, if you want to get into the mindset of a reporter back then, like, their typewriter is basically like their home.
Yes. And, well, you mentioned Ben Bradley, which the film was rated PG at the time, and there is a fair amount of swearing in here.
I was surprised by that. That PG was, you know, kind of a combination of what PG and PG-13 are today, but there is quite a bit of strong language in this movie. But
Some of it creative,
and I think that in another context would have probably been rated R, but they knew that this was a public interest, you know, story that people were probably taking their teenage kids to see, and that was okay.
I don't think this would have gotten an R rating. There's nothing really going on here.
Yeah.
That would have.
I can see that.
But I also think he placed too much of an emphasis on strong language when it comes to the rating system.
That's a good point.
This definitely would not be a modern day PG movie, but PG-13, I think it could easily slide by.
That's a good point. And like I said, I think that this movie was just viewed as, this was what people were seeing. Like you said, this was a high grossing movie of 1976. Even though this is, you know, 2 years after Nixon has resigned, that there is still a great interest in it.
And now I remembered what I was thinking. You mentioned how there is so much of the story still left untold.
Yeah.
In the movie. But do you think it would have made much of a difference had it gone all the way to Gerald Ford pardoning him?
Oh, right. I wouldn't have gone necessarily that far. I just would have gotten it to where they start, you know, opening up the committees and looking into it. And, you know, there starts having, you know, more of the public addresses saying, you know, we know that, you know, this is a big deal. And, you know, we're acknowledging that something has happened. I can't remember exactly what happened after the inauguration. I definitely wouldn't have gone all the way to, you know.
But
you know,
that would definitely make a good movie.
They definitely could have made a sequel if they had wanted to, because they, you know.
Yes.
Bernstein and Woodward did make, after this, they'd have The Final Days, which is all about the last year of the Nixon presidency. Because, when All the President's Men came out, Nixon had not resigned yet. And they were basically like saying like almost like a to be continued. So, of course, you've had various movies since then that have covered it. So I don't think that this movie is any, you know, weaker for not having the complete story, because at that point you'd be like, well, cover the stuff before the Watergate scandal, cover all of Nixon. It's like you have to pick and choose. I think, you know, there could have been a tiny bit more they could have included, but I think that it definitely has a good stopping point. And like, it, you know, there wasn't too much left in the story where the central players were no longer Woodward and Bernstein, because everybody was talking about it. They were, you know, like you said before, they were for so long one of the only papers that were really giving, you know, attention to Watergate, because it was kind of viewed as open and shut. The grand jury had only, you know, indicted the burglars, and they're like, that's the case. And they thought that there was more to it.
And we were talking about this trilogy. You have The Post, then there is All the President's Men, and then Frost Nixon would complete the story.
Yeah, and that's actually another good one, because that's technically a journalism story too. I mean, and then that's sort of a weird one, because like David Frost is like sort of like a more like a TV personality who like ended up interviewing the president.
Wikipedia defines him as a British television host, journalist, comedian, and writer.
Right. But he was sort of an odd choice from what I know about him to be the person who was interviewing Nixon. But
I don't fully understand his career. Like, I know what it is.
Yeah.
Like, how does one make those choices?
Right. Yeah. You could definitely watch that. I mean, if you want to make it a quartet, you throw in, I guess, Oliver Stone's Nixon. But at that point, you're probably just watching too many movies.
Also, Oliver Stone is not right. known for the most...
the most accuracy, yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, is there anything else? I mean, do you think that looking at this movie, you know, it says about politics that we can take away or that, you know, applies to today?
I think I'm too jaded at this point because I've seen the evolution of the 24-hour news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, I have not grown up in a world without cable. So CNN was covering Desert Storm
mm-hmm.
3 months after I was born.
Mm-hmm.
August 1991. Oh, yeah. 3 months exactly. So it was still at a time when CNN was acknowledged to be down the center, not biased. And then we've gone into the 24-hour news cycle where now it's just people spouting their opinions without all the facts. And
mm-hmm.
CNN primetime contributes to that.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch the daytime programming, it is more of a straight news.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I don't think this really teaches us anything. I think the Washington Post did learn a lot about this because after the Trump administration and the scandals and the whole alternative facts and fake news thing, they changed their logo to Democracy Dies in Darkness.
Right, right.
Which I thought was a very clever move given the paper's history with presidential scandals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that there's a few things that I think, not just the movie, but the story in general, that it very much still, this idea that one reporter or two reporters can just hook onto a story that just won't let go. People still think that, like...
There's also a lot of characters that are not mentioned in the movie, to be fair.
Right, that's true. But still, the idea that a group of reporters can just latch onto a story and they can follow the breadcrumbs. Like, this has really shaped what we think about investigative journalism. This is how, you know, it works.
Even though, unfortunately, it doesn't really exist anymore.
Right. But, you know, definitely if you're looking to this movie, they're like, yeah, you know, that guy could really find out this about this politician's. Like, does that really work anymore? Who knows? But as right, the movie portrays it, that's the way it looks.
It's ideal that plucky 18-year-olds think of when they choose to become a journalism major in mm-hmm. undergrad.
Right. It's the same thing when people, you know, talk about, oh, I'm going to be a lawyer and I'm going to help people. It's like, no, I'm going to work at a firm and work 80 hours and, you
and
know,
corporate just mergers.
Work with corporate mergers and wills, and it's going to be, yeah. So, but also.
That reminds me of, have you seen Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
No, but I've heard of it.
There's a song called Don't Be a Lawyer.
Okay.
Where they mention how, like, all of the law, that like, types of lawyers that actually try to do good in the world don't make money.
Yeah, right. But I think also just the this movie still, you know, built the popular, you know, I guess perception of Woodward and Bernstein. And even though they're maybe, I guess they aren't on any staff for any paper anymore, but they still do write books, you know. Woodward was very, you know, involved with chronicling a lot of the things in the Trump administration. I know that
there was a scandal over that.
Right. Bernstein, there was a scandal over that. Bernstein, I know, at least wrote one book on Hillary Clinton, and I'm sure he's written other things. I think he also might, you know, they both show up on TV from time to time and are asked questions. Yes. So they are still, you know, considered, you know, very, you know, important people. You know, some people might say, oh, well, they kind of started the idea that anonymous sources are like, that's okay. It was like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's maybe kind of a gray area. But.
And one thing that I caught also was you need to be familiar with journalism because they just randomly say like, oh, yeah, he's talking to me on deep background.
Yeah, I had to look that up.
Without giving context, which when I was in school, I knew what that meant, but I
mm-hmm.
am not professionally a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
though some of those terms, like, I can, yeah, that's a real thing, but I didn't know exactly. So deep background is when the source does not want to be identified at all. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, the source said this, whereas background's like when you're like a top official in the White House who's in the cabinet, mm-hmm. or like a top cabinet official, which is what you get all the time with UK news.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously on the record is just normal. Like Bob Smith said this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
But, you know, I really did enjoy going back and watching this because, you know, I think that there's always going to be this fascination with Watergate and with just journalism's role in politics. And I think that, I mean, certainly this isn't the only movie about it, but I think this is the most well-known one, and it's still probably one of the best about it.
And that's the thing for me, especially as I do more and more episodes, which is why this isn't going on in perpetuity, I'm realizing how jaded I've become and how inured to the whole process, because I do watch the news on a daily basis. I mm-hmm. see what's the latest with Hunter Biden, who's talking about Joe Biden's age. What did Donald Trump do now? Who's being investigated? The next movie in this series I'm doing with Alex Marcus, our podcast editor,
mm-hmm.
and it's The Ides of March with George Clooney and Ryan okay. Gosling,
mm-hmm.
which is loosely based on Howard Dean's 2004 campaign.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That surprised me. But as I'm watching this, I'm just like, yeah, this doesn't hit the way they maybe intended it to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And All the President's Men, over time with the changing political and journalistic landscape, it's now just like, oh great, another scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And right. It's the burnout is real.
Yeah, I can tell.
There's only so much noise you can listen to, and I'm just like, okay, I'm done. I'm now going to go watch reality shows in German because I'm learning German. And like, if I'm watching Nailed It Germany, I'm like, okay, well, at least I'm going to learn cooking terms. So that could be useful. So, yeah. But you clearly don't have the burnout I'm experiencing when it comes to political movies and politics in general.
I mean, I understand it. And it's just sort of, it's all, I don't know, I guess part of the process. it's all going somewhere, I guess, is how I have to view it as. Political movies, no, I could probably watch, you know, I mean, and granted, they might not be necessarily the most, like, political in the sense that it has a president. So I could watch Air Force One. It's not really a political movie. It has the president in it, but it's really just about Harrison Ford like fighting a bunch of, you know, old communist terrorists, and stuff blows up, and that's fun. Or like, I was like, oh, maybe I'll watch Absolute Power, which is like, what if Gene Hackman was president and like covered up a murder or something? I don't know. So again, very much like politics adjacent more than politics actually.
Yes, I think we're at a point where, and you can see from the time period, because in the 90s, a lot of the movies that we've just from that time period that I've discussed with guests
mm-hmm.
are more lighthearted, like Dave, where Dave swaps places with the president because the president mm-hmm. has a stroke or a heart attack and is incapacitated, or Dip, which pairs, no, I wouldn't say well, because it's a teen comedy disguised as a political satire,
mm-hmm.
but it, again, came out in the 90s, lighthearted take on the Watergate scandal.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Deep Throat wasn't known, and instead of being this man, it was two teenage girls.
Right. Which I think is funny. I haven't seen the movie, though.
I'd say go watch it. You're mm-hmm. probably going to find it as some sort of weird artifact rather than a right. good movie, because it doesn't know what it wants to be. But it does have Will Ferrell, two of the kids in the hall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a weird movie. And now our political films, when we do get them, are much more cynical.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have anything to back this up, but I have done some reading on television post 9/11. 9/11 may have had something to do with the shift with our media getting darker and more cynical.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I believe that.
I can't imagine someone coming out with some sort of jokey movie about the presidency at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten to the point where reality is stranger than fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a little shorter than what I usually do, but on Pop Rick Goes to Washington. But do you have any final thoughts?
I'm probably gonna go and like look through the book again, just because this movie got me more interested in it, just to see, you know, similarities. And just as a movie person, I really want to look at like the director, Alan Pakula, his filmography. This was sort of part of what they called his paranoia trilogy, because political thrillers were really big in the 70s because of Watergate. So he also made a movie called Clute, and he made a movie called The Parallax View, which they're all political thrillers. Well, actually, Clute's not a political thriller, but they're all thrillers. So, but that's really has nothing to do with politics. That's just me as a movie person.
Since you said you were going to go back and look at the book, All the Presidents Men, yeah. I also recommend Nixonland if you want to learn more about Nixon and the Watergate scandal. Anything else you want to mention where people can find you?
Right. So I am for at the moment still on, I guess it's called X now. Elon Musk has changed the name of Twitter. I'm on there. I just mostly talk about weird things about movies, like what aspect ratio they are, or I don't know, weird other stuff. I'm doing, you know, the Anniversary Brothers podcast pretty frequently, so we just recorded one today, should be coming up soon.
Isn't that once a month?
We do about twice a month. We just marked 5 years of doing podcasts, Josh and me.
Congratulations. Yeah. My name's Allison Lips. I've been your host for Pop Rick Goes to Washington. Please join us next time, and thank you for listening. Bye.